My name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here, and it's good to be sober, and I don't know about being Irish. I got this accent from Hooked on Phonics, the Shamrock version, you know? And it's so good to be here. I mean, if you don't believe in miracles and Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm Irish, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm sober on St. Patrick's Day, you know? Right. I want to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to come here and do service. It's a great privilege and an honour to be asked to speak at a meeting of AA, one I don't take lightly. I want to thank Brian from the bottom of my heart for being on standby all day Friday. I pretty much sat in the airport for about 8 or 9 hours up in New York. And I really want to thank my dear friend Cliff for doing the switcheroo. And we were driving in. It was late at night. We're coming in from the airport with Brian, and it's dark. And I'm like, are these people in the AA Witness Protection Program, you know? I know we're anonymous, but this is ridiculous, you know? And we got here, and what a weekend. Man. If I didn't get anything out of this weekend, it's because I didn't bring anything to put it in. It's been just exceptional. And that's not, I mean, really, it's been just one after another. And unfortunately, that's all going to come to a screeching halt around now, you know. In fact, the committee says to me, Paul, you know, we've got another event here this afternoon. Can you guarantee the room will be emptied by noon? I said, I can guarantee that with mathematical certitude, you know. The time I'm finished, there'll be tumbleweeds blowing through here, you know. And we're hearing jokes here all week. Yeah, I'll tell a joke. There's a guy driving to work, and he's late for work, and he's speeding along, and the cop pulls him over. And the cop says, you know, you're going a little bit too fast there. And the cop looks in the passenger seat, and he sees this large bag of knives and swords and bayonets, and there was an Excalibur in there. And the cop says, what's with this? The guy says, let me explain. I have a cabaret act. I'm a juggler. And these are the tools of my trade. And the cop says, that must be some cabaret act. The guy says, I'll tell you what, if I give you a quick demo, would you let me go with a warning? The cop says, okay. So the guy's standing on the side of the car, and he's juggling these knives and swords and bayonets. And across the street, there's an AA meeting just ending. And the old-timer says to a sponsee, aren't you glad you stopped drinking? Look at the sobriety tests they're giving these days, you know. So if you're here this morning, stay here with us in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not getting any better out there, you know. And they want a beautiful hotel. Oh, my God, this hotel. The towels in my room are so big and soft and fluffy, I can't tell you the trouble I had getting them into my suitcase earlier on. Had to push down to get them all in there, you know. If you're new here this weekend, I want to welcome you. I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to sell A. This is attraction, not promotion. But I will tell you this, and I don't mean cash in prizes. You cannot get where I'm standing today from where I came from without Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an impossible journey. Why do I continue to come to AA? I know how the movie goes, but I wouldn't miss it to see someone walking in that door on the worst night of their life. And we talk about the grace of God. It's so much more than grace. It's mercy. And the definition of mercy I like the best is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And back in August of 1992, the few people left in my life was going that way. The only people coming this way was Alcoholics Anonymous. And they carried this message. My message might even keep me sober. that carry this message. And if you're new here this morning, what is the message of Alcoholics Anonymous? It's been talked about here all weekend. When complete defeat through alcohol, I have a body that won't let me drink and a mind that won't let me stop. One drink creates a thirst I can't quench. When I control my drinking, I don't enjoy it. When I start to enjoy my drinking, I can't control it. With your help, and I say as a testament to AA, with your help, I haven't had a drink since August of 1992. One drink this morning, not five, not ten, one, destination unknown. That's what showed up here. And these people brought me from a place of powerlessness and unmanageability where I'm living in a place today where I've access to power and unlimited supply. And if you're new here today, don't think, oh, I'm new, I've got nothing to offer AA. Everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous has got worth and value. And don't think that you've got to meet AA. AA will meet you today exactly where you are. Some of the guys here and I, we share the same sponsor. And our sponsor talks about, we come to the AA campfire. You'll hear, I hope you don't hear it down here, but you hear it up in York sometimes. Oh, I don't want to go into a drunk log. I don't want to go into the crash bag. I don't understand that. We're a storytelling community. We're a storytelling society. There's a line I misquoted for years in AA. I would have said, how it was, what happened, and how it is today. It doesn't say that. It says how we were, what happened, and how we are today. And there's such power in that. I used to live like this. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I now live like this. And as I said, don't think. I mean, A is the only place I know in the world where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And everybody, a day, a month, a year. You saw it here last night. If you stay in AA, you'll get longevity, but not seniority. If I think I'm better than somebody else because I'm here a few 24s, shame on me. We are a fellowship of equals. Thank God our fellowship is horizontal, not vertical. It's egalitarian, not a hierarchy. And everyone in here. And we come here and we tell our stories. I used to live like this, but because of these people and these principles, I now live like this. I used to look at the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as information. I'm an alcoholic. I should do an inventory. I realize today, and it's been shared so beautifully this weekend, the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're not informative, they're transformative. I stand on firm ground here this morning telling you that if you go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you will be a different person at step 12 than you were at step 1, whether you want to be or not. You will be. And as I said, if you're new this morning, come all the way into Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a paragraph in chapter 4 in the big book, and it talks about the ancient theory of the flat earth. The AA word is a flat earth. If you go to the edge of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going off. And the thing about going to the edge of AA, it's a drift. It's almost a glacial drift. And you don't realize you're going till you're gone. And by the time you get to the edge of Alcoholics Anonymous, if there's any signposts, they're in a language you don't speak anymore and a language you don't understand anymore. Because we speak a certain language in AA. You know the language my disease speaks? My disease operates from the neck up. That's alcoholism. My disease wants me talking to me about me. That's a conversation that never ends well for a guy like me. And I get caught up in this circular. I think this has been shared this weekend. This whole program, this whole fellowship is designed for one thing. To drag me kicking and screaming. See, I'm convinced this is where the big show's going on. Lights, camera, action. Thank God in AA we don't speak the language of the head. That's alcoholism. We speak the language of the heart. And this program is designed to drag me out of down out of here into here where the real stuff is going on. I hope this morning I don't talk to an alcoholic. I hope I don't talk at an alcoholic. I hope and pray I don't get up the spiritual hilltop and talk down to an alcoholic. What is Alcoholics Anonymous? If you put it in the refiner's fire and you bring it down to its simplest form, it's one alcoholic talking with another alcoholic to remove feelings of differentness and separateness and uniqueness. I am you and you are me. I'm from up in New York. I was very friendly with Liz B., the first African-American woman to get sober in AA. She got sober in 1952. And Liz would always say when she was sharing, without you, there's no me. If I'm doing AA alone, I'm not doing AA. There's a friend of mine who says, it's BB. I said, what's BB? He said, I don't know, but it's not AA, you know? And I think Bill Wilson got that from day one. Bill Wilson, I mean, I'm a bit of an AA nerd. I live in New York. Sometimes I go into Towns Hospital. It's not a hospital today. Up in Central Park West, where he got sober on December 11th of 1934. And I stand outside that building, maybe drag a couple of sponsees in with me. And I don't know what happened in that room, but something happened. Because for thousands of years, there's been people like us. And there wasn't a lot of options for people like us. You went to a jail, you went to an institution, or you went to a graveyard. And the sad thing about this disease, by the time you're actually graveyard dead, you've been dead mentally and spiritually and emotionally for years. And anybody who mattered in your life is long gone. Because that's what we do. We squeeze and we squeeze. The people are like, go and drink or go and don't drink, but you got to go. Bill B., who wrote the screenplay for When Love Is Not Enough, he was telling me one time that he used to go up the stepping stones and he would sit with Lois and he'd just put the old cassette on and run the tape and ask her some questions. And she would talk about Bill and Bob and the early days of AA. And then he said, this statement just tumbled out of her mouth. She says, when love is not enough. And he said, that's the title for the book. Isn't that so true? If love could have got me sober, I'd have been sober a long time before AA. Good people, people that cared deeply for me, tried to get me sober. I could stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. And Bill Wilson lay in that hospital bed on December 11th of 1934, had this idea. He thought to himself, surely there must be other people out there like me. I wonder if my experience could help them. And before he left the hospital, it says in our literature, in the doctor's opinion, he requested the privilege of speaking with the other patients in the hospital. I mean, the jokes write themselves. Hold on a second. You mean the guy that's been detoxed 3 times, he wants to talk to the patients? And it says in our literature, with serious misgiving, they allowed it to happen. We didn't have steps. We didn't have literature. But we had each other. And Bill Wilson the steps hadn't been read, but he was trying to practice the principles of the 12th step. And Dan, if Bill Wilson had waited, he was sober a year before he helped another alcoholic, we'd all be dead today. And he was trying to practice those. And it's not so true. If I'm not trying to practice the principles of the 12th step, what am I doing here? I'm working an 11-step program. You know what an 11-step program is for a guy like me? It's nothing more than a self-help program. It's a highly evolved self-help program, but it's all about me. This whole program does not make sense without the 12th step. I'm a great believer that Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like a backwater pond. It needs fresh water. And the new person is the fresh water. Without the fresh water, it becomes stagnant. And nothing grows in stagnant water. The pictures are right here. Bill went looking for Bob. They went looking for Bill D. And you can trace that moment in time to this moment in time. And Bill had that idea of a chain of drunks. That was the analogy he thought of. And that's what I asked myself this weekend. How strong is my link in the chain? Is it strong to the people that went ahead of me? And more importantly, is it strong to the people coming behind me? If someone says to me today, Paul, can I comprehend the word serenity? Can I know peace? Absolutely. Walk this journey with us. And everybody in here has got something to offer an Alcoholics Anonymous. I know Peter a long time from the same area up in New York, and he knows this group, the Hilltop Group in Brooklyn. My friend of mine tells this powerful story. He said on the Saturday night meeting, about 20 minutes into the meeting, in comes this woman who's visibly drunk. And the meeting took a quick pause, and somebody went over and helped her down to a seat. And they got her a half cup of coffee, and they said, listen, the meeting's in progress, but if you can just sit quietly, try to listen as best you can, someone will talk to you after the meeting. So the meeting starts up again. What's the old saying? Is it odd or is it God? 20 minutes goes by, and in comes this man. And he's visibly drunk. And he happens to sit right next to this woman. Now she's 20 minutes sober. And she gets out of her seat and gets him a half cup of coffee and says, if you sit quietly, someone will talk to you after the meeting. That's the Alcoholics Anonymous I want to be a member of. No spiritual elitism here. We all have worth and value in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Bill Wilson, as I said, a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I mean, when you think about it, Bill Wilson, he was 2.5 years sober. And he had written the first four chapters of this book. If you read those first four chapters, it pretty much tries to dismantle the alcoholic ego. And powers over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. Next page. My life's unmanageable and powers over alcohol. On and on. The jaywalker, Fred, all the different examples. And then it gets to chapter 5 and Bill... It was a Saturday afternoon, and he realized this is a critical point in the book. This is a turning point. We stood at the turning point. And he prayed. And he sat down and he put pencil to paper. Bill Wilson was the sort of a guy who said, why stand when you can sit, and why sit when you can lie down? He was sitting writing on a big legal pad. Bill Wilson wrote the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in 20 minutes. Are you telling me that's not divine inspiration? What does Einstein say? A problem cannot be solved at the same level of consciousness that created the problem. Bill Wilson was lifted to a higher level of consciousness. He wrote about things that were beyond his knowing. I remember thinking when I got sober, maybe when I'm 2.5 years sober, maybe I'll write a book. Then I got to be 2.5 years sober. I couldn't even get my sponsor's coffee order right. Was that milk and sugar, or one sugar and no milk, or was it no milk and just sit down and I'll get my own coffee, you know? Okay, you know. And these steps, that's why I'm so glad that you know the wonderful thing about AA and this program, the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the same steps that are on the wall today were on the wall at my first meeting. It's not like you're 10 years sober and they go, Paul, you're 10 years sober today. Come up here and we'll give you the steps that you get when you're 10 years sober. Congratulations. Or 20 years sober. So the steps don't change. That can only mean one other thing. I change. And that's the wonderful thing about these steps. They're not intellectual. They're experiential. They're organic. They're living. They're breathing. You hear people say, AA is not for people that need it. It's for people that want it. The graveyards are full of people who wanted to be sober. AA is for people that do it. You got to do AA. You got to get your hands in there and do it. And it doesn't matter. I used to complain to my sponsor, she's doing it this way and he's doing it that way. They're not doing it my way. He said, I don't want to hear it. They're doing it. I'd be like, listen, I'm trying to report accurate information from the home group. You should be happy that I got my finger on the pulse of AA. You see, it's gossip. They're doing it. I don't want to hear about it. It was said last night, everybody in here at this moment in time in the universe is doing the very best they can in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think the wonderful thing about this program, I mean, it talks about Roland Hazard's pictures here. Thank you, Lee, for setting up the room. So wonderful, my friend. And Roland Hazard, you know, maybe you know a little about the history. From a wealthy family up in the Northeast, textile family. And like wealthy families do, they throw money at problems. And they had a lot of money. And they sent him over to Europe, to Geneva. And they first asked Dr. Freud to take him. Dr. Freud was a leading psychologist of that time. And Freud refused. He says, he's an alcoholic? No, I don't want him. One of our speakers used to say, that was AA's first big break. Because if Freud had took Roland Hazard, we'd all be sitting here this morning saying, you know, I dreamt last night I was sober. And Carl Jung took him. Now, here's the thing. Roland Hazard didn't spend 28 days in a group. He spent one calendar year, one-on-one, working with Dr. Jung. He didn't even make it out of Europe. He got drunk in Paris. And he doubled back and went back again. And Jung said, I have tried to produce a spiritual awakening in you. But I've been obviously unsuccessful. And he went on to say that these spiritual awakenings, and it says in our literature, these are rare occurrences. I mean, they've been documented through time. These road to Damascus moments where people have suddenly, their lives have been changed in an instant. But they're extremely rare. I think the great gift of Alcoholics Anonymous is we have set up a spiritual method that everybody in here can have a spiritual awakening. And they're not rare. But here's the funny thing about this. Usually when something is mass-produced, it loses its value. Not spiritual awakenings. In fact, the more spiritual awakenings that AA has, the greater the value has gone up. And everyone in here, if I was to sit down knee to knee with every person here who's had a spiritual awakening in AA, your spiritual awakening is as pure and as precious to you as nobody else. That is the great gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I can stand on firm ground and say to a guy walking through the door in terrible condition, walk this journey with us and you will be a different person at step 12 than you were at step 1. And I fought this program. I fought these steps. The steps seemed touchy. They seemed feely. They seemed warm and fuzzy. I figured I'll do these steps. I'll have wind chimes hanging up around the house, you know. We're wearing flip-flops even in the winter time, you know. Joining Oprah's book club. I know I'm dating myself, you know. And I'm here to tell you, you can fool them at the coffee pot at 7:30 at night. I've done it. How's it going, Paul? Oh, it's going great. You know when untreated alcoholism would come to visit me? 2:00 in the morning. The could-haves and the should-haves, and the guilt and the shame and remorse. And every night about 2:00 in the morning, this book would magically appear on my bedside table. And it wasn't a big book. It was called Where I Should Be in My Life by Now by Paul McQuaid. I hope you don't have that book at home. You read that book at 2:00 in the morning with no drinking, no program, you're ready to put a rope over the rafters. And there was people talking about the problem. There was people talking about the solution. Our book says, contempt prior to investigation, you were looking at it. My friend Andy, we have a dear friend from Belfast, and she would always say, my alcoholic ego, when it comes to these steps, my alcoholic ego was so defended. There was people pointing to the solution, pointing to the 12 steps, telling me that I can have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. But I'm so defended. I'm so locked in self. I'm a closed circuit. Nothing's getting in and nothing's getting out. That rather than look at what you're pointing at, I will look at who's doing the pointing. What does she know? What do they know? And I will find fault with you. And I will dismantle you, disregard you, and dismiss you. I mean, it's pretty pathetic. And my sponsor tried to help me. He says, Paul, this is your miracle. The least you can do is participate in it. And if you're new here today and you're in that position, don't be a spectator at your own miracle show. And I bottomed out 2.5 years into Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into AA, I didn't owe much money, I was 2.5 years off drink. And we're talking about the three parts of the triangle. I was doing unity. I was going to plenty of meetings. I realized many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, none make it impossible. I need you and you need me. Service. I said, I'm making more coffee than Juan Valdez. Are you kidding me? But I wouldn't do door number 3. I wouldn't do recovery. And 2.5 years into Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been jumping off place twice in my life. Once with drink and once with no drink and no program. It's a different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. And a guy came up to me one night at a meeting, and he wasn't my sponsor. He says, "Paul, can I talk to you for a second?" I said, "Sure." He says, "You're dying. And you're dying right in the middle of AA." He says, "You know what you're like? You're like a starving man at a spiritual banquet. There's all this food on offer, and you're over here living on bread and water." That's exactly what I was doing. And against my better judgment, in fact, everything that's helped me in AA has been against my better judgment. I get into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is it good to find out who you are and who you're not? To get a full knowledge of your condition? Absolutely. But when did my life catch on fire? When did great events come to pass in my life? When I turned around and I tried to bring another man through this program. When all else fails, working with another alcoholic. If you know a little bit of history, on Mother's Day weekend of 1935, Bill Wilson was standing in Akron, Ohio. He was 6 months sober. He had ran around New York for 6 months, trying to get people sober. And he hadn't got one person sober. I used to always discount the non-alcoholic. What do they know? We would not be where we are today if it wasn't for our friends, our non-drinking, non-alcoholic friends of AA. Because he went back home to Brooklyn Heights, Clinton Street, that I know well, and he put his head in his hands at the kitchen table, and he said to Lois, "I thought I was on to something. I really thought, but I've ran around New York for 6 months. I've been going to flop houses. I've been going to park row benches. I've been going to skid row places. I haven't got one person sober." And she's standing outside. What's the old joke? When you're inside the jar, you can't read the label. And she states the obvious. "Bill, you're still sober." "That's right. I am still sober." He goes back up to Towns Hospital, speaks to Dr. Silkworth, a non-alcoholic. And Dr. Silkworth says, "Bill, you got to get off the spiritual hilltop. You're going to a guy who's sitting on a park bench or a gal with a bottle of wine, and you're talking about this grand experience you had, about the room filled up with light, and the blinds were flapping. They're like, 'You sure you don't want to drink of this wine, you know?'" He says, "Why don't you hit them with the 1-2 punch that puts every alcoholic on the ropes? The obsession that gets you drinking and the allergy that keeps you drinking once you start. Every alcoholic can identify with that." So standing in Akron, armed with new information from two non-alcoholics, he was standing that Mother's Day weekend with $10 in his pocket. The bar's here, the phone's here, and Bill Wilson was thinking about drinking. And at that moment in time, on Mother's Day weekend of 1935, your life and my life hung by a thread this thin. Because if Bill Wilson walks in here, I don't know if we'd be here today. Would that window of opportunity come round again? Hadn't come around in 2,000 years. But thank God, Bill Wilson, to his credit, had that second thought and went to the phone and made phone call after phone call and eventually got talking to Dr. Bob. And when he met Dr. Bob, Dr. Bob couldn't meet him that Saturday because he was so drunk. And the next day, he went to meet Bill Wilson. And he said to his wife, Ann Smith, "I'll give this guy 15 minutes. Dr. Bob was so hungover, he couldn't even drive his own car. His 15-year-old son drove the car. and Bill and Bob, and the introductions were made, and they were often, if you've ever been to that gatehouse, they're often in a little side room, and they didn't talk for 15 minutes. They talked for 5.5 hours. And Bill Wilson, his first thing to Dr. Bob was, he says, "Did you ever feel like drinking when you didn't want to drink?" And he says, "Yesterday." "Did you ever find yourself drinking and you couldn't stop?" And Dr. Bob says, "Yesterday." And Alcoholics Anonymous was born. The doctor treats the physical symptoms and the alcoholic dies drunk. The clergyman looks to the lack of religious conviction and the alcoholic dies drunk. The psychiatrist looks for the causes and the alcoholic dies drunk. The family tries to massage the effects and the alcoholic dies drunk. Now, those things are important, don't get me wrong, but there's a hierarchy of recovery here, and nothing in human history has worked better than one alcoholic talking with another alcoholic. We're sitting here this morning on a Sunday morning, and we talk about happy, joyous, and free. I used to always love when Clancy would say, "We're sitting here and we're safe and we're sane and we're sober." It shouldn't be this way. And I remember hearing Tom I speak one night, and Tom says, "You know, I don't want AA to go down on my watch." And I thought, and that's so true. If AA ever goes down, it won't be from the outside in. It'll be from the inside out. Because we forgot where we came from. We forgot our purpose. We forgot who we were, what we were about. I love one of the kids saying, "I stay in your lane." What's our lane? God has asked me to do one thing in AA. Can you stay sober and try to help another alcoholic? Can you stay in that lane? And by doing that, which I don't do perfectly, I've been so grossly overpaid, it's embarrassing. And got paid by things of real value. Oscar Wilde, the Irish writer, says he knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me things of real value. The big ticket items in AA don't have a price tag. They're cashless. They wake up on a Sunday morning, safe, sane, sober, no thoughts of drink. No obsessions for drink. I know, mate, if I was to tell the guy next door to me when I go home tonight, you know, I was down there in Tennessee, and you're like, "What, do you want a medal?" But I tell you, that was a freedom I did not have in August of 1992. Every decision I made, alcohol had become the common denominator in my life. Every decision I made, knowingly or unknowingly, was divided through a drink. Even the most, will there be enough booze to get me to the lobby? Will there be enough when I get there? Will there be enough to get me back here? And when you live your life as we do, less and less people in it. Though I was sitting in an apartment, drinking around the clock, against my own will, knowing loneliness that only an alcoholic can know, and I caught my reflection in the mirror. And I'm not drinking for any more good times. I'm drinking for unconscious time. I know I've burnt my life to the ground. If I can just keep up this vodka down, maybe I can pass out for a couple of hours. And this terrible existence that's my life, maybe I'll get a couple of hours relief. And then something happened. I love when someone's telling their story and it goes down and it goes down. And then they say what I believe is the most spiritual words in an AA talk. "And then." There's not a person in here this morning with one day or more that hasn't had an "and then" moment. And this is mine. I'm sitting in the apartment. Here's a recipe for happiness. Lock yourself in an apartment, close the blinds, drink round the clock, and play the saddest blues music. I would listen to the great Warren Zevon, If you won't leave me, I'll find somebody that will. Those sort of songs alcoholics like to listen to, you know. Or the Al-Anon version of that song. If you leave me, can I come too? I'm just joking, Laurie. I'm just joking. I'm in this apartment. You know, you wake up, is it dawn, is it dusk? Who cares? I'm not going anywhere. And a piece of paper came under my door. I looked at this piece of paper. It said what I was hearing back from, I was 15, back in Belfast. You're a nice guy, Paul, but you drink too much. I had a man's telephone number. Now, strange enough, a piece of paper coming under your door. The stranger thing is, I called the number. Because I'm Irish, I'm stoic, I'm a wall builder. The thing about walls is, you're not getting out, but nobody's getting in. And I would have pointed fingers when I first got here. I built those walls. I built them one brick at a time. I did. Nobody else did. And I called this guy, and his wife was a great member of Al-Anon, Kitty. And she said, well, I think it's that Irish guy on the phone. And I heard Jerry coming to the phone. And he said, where are you? And I told him where I lived in Rockaway Beach. And he says, me and another guy is going to come to your apartment. They're from the old South Bronx group in New York. And that group had a mantra. We don't give up on anybody. What a great mantra for a home group. Now, I thought, just two regular guys. One guy was a subway conductor. The other guy was a commercial removals guy in Manhattan. Two regular guys, but like our book says, they were armed with the facts about themselves. Now, I thought they were going to come and talk to me about my drinking. Because back in August of 92, the few people left in my life, that's what they wanted to talk about. Hey, Paul, maybe you've had these conversations. We need to talk about your drinking. Do you know what you did last night? And I'd stand there nodding my head. And I'm thinking as they're talking to me, I'm thinking I wish they would go away so I could go drinking again. It makes perfect sense to me now that God, in his infinite wisdom, would use alcoholics to get alcoholics sober. Because I listen to nobody. But I listen with you people. Because you talk about you. And I find out about me. Our most prized possession in AA is identification. If we lose that, we're finished. Identification. And these two men came to my apartment, just two regular guys, and they came in and they sat down and they didn't talk about my drinking. They talked about their drinking. And they told story after story of their drinking. And then I was going to say the magic, but it's not magic because that means it's a trick. The mystery unfolded. I told these two men within 20 minutes something I hadn't even told myself. I coughed up the big fur ball. I said to this man, I can't stop drinking. I can't stop. The last time they put me in a hospital, I was drinking the same day as I got out of the hospital. What's wrong with me? And the guy put his arm around me. I could close my eyes now and think about it. And he put his arm around me and he said the most beautiful words an alcoholic can hear. He said, help is on the way. If you're new here this morning, I want to tell you, help is on the way. Hang in there. You don't have to live one more day than the way you're feeling today. And this is not, I mean, our most prized possession. It's not what Dr. Bob said when he first met Bill Wilson. It was the first human being he had ever met that he felt fully understood him. And not because he read it in a book somewhere. Little did I know that would be my sobriety date. And those two men, about 36 hours later, the book bended me into a car and brought me up to a place called Fort Tilden in Rockaway and brought me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And walking in the doors of an AA meeting, it's the greatest singular event in my life. Everything else is secondary and tertiary. I'm so glad there wasn't a guy standing at the door with a clipboard saying, "Paul, check the box for what you want." I would have checked the box for not drinking. I would have shortchanged myself. I got that. But I got me back, I got you back, and I got him back. And I'd lost a whole lot. If you're new here today, we throw the word miracle around a lot in AA. What is a miracle? It's a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature this morning to be lying drunk somewhere, and I'm not. Now, how did that happen? It didn't happen because of me. It happened because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new here today, and this is not a sales pitch, there's a miracle here with your name on it. Nobody can take it from you, and nobody can take it for you. Come in and start to live the life that your higher power always wanted you to live before drink took you down a different road. George Eliot, the writer, says, "It's never too late to live the life you're meant to live." I believe that in AA. You hear people saying AA, "Oh, I came to AA and I got my life back." I don't want my life back. It sucked. Out of for 30 years. I got a whole brand new life. And other people from the drinking days, yes, but things are different today. My world today is built on concrete. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit up here and say, "Oh, if you're new here today, getting sober is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. Except one other thing, drink yourself to death." And the roller coaster goes up and the roller coaster goes down. Just don't get off. Stay on. Ride it out. And this program is so simple, I almost missed it. I mean, it is a funny place. They don't tell you 100 things one time. They tell you 3 or 4 things 100 times over. I probably heard everything I needed to know in the first 30 days in AA, but I got to hear it over and over again. I learned 2 + 2 = 4 once in my life, never to learn it again. The fact that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life's unmanageable, drunk or sober, I had to learn that lesson over and over. And I got to hear from everybody in here. This is not hyperbole. But I need every person in here this morning to help me stay sober here today. And it's so good in life, in a world that can be uncertain at times. It's so good to life to know who you are and where you belong. I'm an alcoholic, and I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been surrendered by the bottle to the bottle. There's nothing out there for me. Yeah, and I love the old timers in AA. They didn't tell me, "Oh, Paul, your life's going to get better." They didn't tell me that. They said, "If you make the fact that your name is Paul and you're an alcoholic, if you make the central fact of your life in AA, things around you may not be okay, but you will be okay." And I went through, we heard it shared this weekend, went through difficult times in sobriety. I went through a divorce myself at 20 years sober. Resentments to here. Have it up to here. But here's the good news. Now that I'm in the lifeboat of AA, I never have to go through anything alone again. Never. You know what gets you in trouble in AA when you've been sober a while? Spiritual pride. How can I go to my home group at 20 years sober and tell them, well, I don't need to do a PowerPoint presentation, but somebody has to know what time of day it is in my spiritual world. I'm a great believer that Alcoholics Anonymous is a reality check on how my life is going today. Not how I think it should go or I want it to go. How's the rubber meeting the road in my life today? I need to be sponsored. Actively sponsored. Because see, I want to lift the neck up. When I'm living up here, you know what it's like? Ever go to the carnival and you go into the fun house and the mirrors are all like, I look at life and it sort of looks, but I don't see it properly. I called my sponsor. I was sitting in the airport all day Friday and I'm starting to lose it. I called my sponsor. We got the same sponsor, a few of us guys. And he just gently, and then he asked me, he goes, where are you going anyway? I said, I'm going to Tennessee. He said, oh, you're going all the way to Tennessee to talk? How far would you go to listen? But I told him I loved him, which is growth for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, because before I came to AA, I was a bit like the Irishman who loved his wife so much he almost told her, you know what I mean? So I'm in here, never went through a difficult time of 20 years sober, but thank God I shared about it. Put my pride on the back burner. I remember I was talking about my sponsor and I said, I was asked to speak at something. I said, I don't want to go and speak. I want to hear what I have to say. My life's falling apart in the middle of AA. He said, what do you think this is, Paul? Rainbows and unicorns? This is life on life's terms. You go and you share how you're trying to practice these principles in difficult circumstances. And he said, I'll tell you something. When you're standing at a turning point, when you're going through a difficult time in AA, there's one of two things can happen. It can kick you into AA, or it can kick you out of AA. And it's usually what way you're facing. And thank God at that time, I was facing into AA. And that tough time pushed me further. It's been shared this weekend. Sobriety's not a journey. I mean, sobriety is a journey. It's not a destination. It's a process, not an event. Double down, more service, talking to my sponsor more, throwing myself deeper and deeper into AA. And by doing that, I survived to tell the tale. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous will guarantee a spiritual awakening. You know the key to success in AA? Is to stay awake. It's so easy when you've been here a while to fall asleep in AA. You get inured, used to it. Thank God for service. If I want to stay spiritually caffeinated, service is the key to success in AA. Because when I'm trying to help you, I'm not thinking about me. And I got through that difficult time. And I love that you're my brothers and sisters. I came during that time and you know what I love about AA? The sharing that we have here. It's authentic. It's real. There's times it's raw. I know there's people sitting here today going through extremely different circumstances. But thank God you don't have to go through it alone. And we understand each other. You're my people. We're like the herd this weekend. We're like the island of the misfit toys. I'm a jack in the box, but my name's Paul. And they're like, that's okay. You're right here with us in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the people have, why do I continue to come to AA? I get a front row seat for the very best that humanity has to offer. The people. If I have learned nothing else in 31 years in AA, it's this. that God works through people. People get people sober. So if you're new here today, don't do what I did. There's a story, probably appropriate for a Sunday morning. Some people say it's a religious story, but it's really a spiritual story. And it's a story of the prodigal son. And that story, we're all prodigal sons and prodigal daughters. And that story is told over different cultures and religions. And the story goes, the guy gets his inheritance, and he goes off and he burns his life to the ground. And then he decides to go back home to his father. Now his father thought he was dead. His father threw a big party. I read that story many times. It says the son comes up to the house. It never actually says if he goes in. If you're new here today, don't do what I did. Now, why you got your first meeting? That's between you and your higher power. That's above my pay grade. But if you're here today, you've been called to the spiritual banquet. Don't do what I did and stand in the corner eating crumbs from the table. Don't stand outside like I did, looking through the window. Come all the way in, sit all the way down, and partake of everything that's on offer. Your higher power wants to give you an abundance. Now, your abundance might look different than mine, but the higher power that I know in AA is a higher power of abundance. But when I'm standing outside the door, nothing can happen. When I'm a closed circuit, nothing can get in. And it's so good. I mean, it's St. Patrick's Day. I'll tell you a couple of stories about Ireland. Ireland was the first country that AA went to in 1946. Now, why they picked Ireland? I think they call that profiling. We're not meant to do that, you know? I know there's some guys here in Philadelphia. The guy called Connor F. He was originally from Ireland, owned a pub in Philadelphia. He was 2 years sober, and he went back to Ireland for a vacation. And he realized there was no A in Ireland. So he wrote a letter to GSO and they sent him what's called a startup kit. And he went round Dublin trying to get a meeting started and put ads in newspapers and was getting nowhere. And he was sitting in the Gresham Hotel in Dublin. He starts talking to this woman at the next table, Eva Jennings. And he tells her, she's a bit like Henrietta Cyberdine. She says, I know this doctor who works with alcoholics. Why don't you go to his hospital? So he goes to this hospital. This is 1946. AA is 11 years old. This doctor's working with alcoholics. He never even heard of AA. He said, I'll tell you what. We got a guy in one of the rooms down here. Like old Bill D. He's a goner. He's been detoxed 20, 25 times. There's times he's drunk on the way home from the hospital. If you can make any impression on him, I'll give you the full support of the hospital. Connor Flynn went down to the guy's bed. And in the bed was a guy called Richard Percival, who had been preached over. And Connor Flynn, what did what's been done here this weekend, he shared his experience and his strength and his hope. And Richard Percival knew this man was talking his language. And that Richard Percival got out of that bed, and those two men started the first meeting in Dublin. And Richard Percival never took another drink to the day he died in 1971. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you are my people. I got sober in New York, but my brother's sober a long time back in Northern Ireland. And you talk about, you know, like a low-level civil war going over there, and the troubles, and where people that normally don't mix. How about we never mix, the Catholics and the Protestants? There's one place they mix, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was home one time on vacation for Christmas many years ago, and the troubles, I mean, the war was going on, and they've got a prison outside of Belfast where they used to keep the paramilitary prisoners called the Mays Prison. And the day after Christmas, they call it Boxing Day, and during visiting hours, one of the Protestant paramilitary leaders got murdered. And the country was on the brink of a civil war. I mean, it was bad. And I was asked to speak at a meeting in Belfast that night. And my brother says to me, "We can't go across Belfast tonight. They're burning buses and barricades." And I said, "Ah, we'll go anyway, you know." And I love AA humor, gallows humor. There's four Catholics in the car, and we're coming from West Belfast. We drive this circuitous route around the Peace Line. We're going into Protestant East Belfast. And one of the guys in the car said, "Just think, the last time a Catholic was in this part of Belfast after dark, he was in the trunk of the car, you know?" So we all sort of laughed at that. And we took this, and we eventually got to the meeting. It's a small meeting. And the young kids over there, the young teenagers, they do this thing called joyriding, where they'll steal cars and drive them around and burn them out. So we pull up, four strangers, and they're looking at our car, fresh wheels. And the chairperson was standing outside the meeting smoking a cigarette, and he knew the kids from the neighborhood. And he shouts across the street, "Hey, leave that car alone. These guys are friends of ours." And we went into that meeting that night. I mean, and the country was on the brink of a civil war. I can't think of one place, never mind Belfast, Northern Ireland, where Catholics and Protestants were sitting together, but they were sitting together in a meeting of AA. And all that stuff that was all over the 6 o'clock news was left where it should be left, in the parking lot. And we sat there, we talked about our common problem and our common solution. And in that, there was more united us than ever divided us. Now, I'm not saying after the meeting we went skipping down the street singing "Kumbaya." But those guys thanked us. They realized the effort we had made. And the guy said, "Call us later and let us know you got home safe." Where else do you see this? Alcoholics Anonymous. Where we give of ourselves for no other reason than to stay sober and live this spiritual life. My friend was in Tel Aviv a few years ago at a meeting, an English-speaking meeting. At the end of the meeting, this Jewish man happened to be standing next to a Muslim woman. And because of their respective religions, they're not allowed to have physical contact. And he said there was like a pregnant pause, and then she picked up the big book, and she held one side of the big book, and he held the other side of the big book, and the circle was formed. Where else do you see this? Only in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to, it's been a spectacular weekend. I want to end on a few words that sums up how I feel about you and how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the Irish blessing. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and the rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of His hand. Thank you.